Welcome to Conversations on Healthcare with Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter. Mark is the founder, president, and CEO of Community Health Center Incorporated, a provider of primary healthcare services for the uninsured and underserved in 13 cities and 218 service locations in Connecticut. Margaret is Senior Vice President and Clinical Director of CHC and is a family nurse practitioner by profession. Conversations on Healthcare is a weekly look at the people and ideas that are transforming the delivery of healthcare in America. And this week, Mark and Margaret will be speaking with John Hoffman, the executive producer of Weight of the Nation, a public health project on the nation's obesity epidemic. In the Tech Report segment, Marianne O'Hare looks at gold nanoparticles that are programmed to hitchhike on cancer cells. And we begin with this week's bright idea.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives.
Traditionally, third-year medical students are in a whirlwind of stressful experiences, bouncing quickly from specialty to specialty and patient to patient, often having only a single interaction with any given patient in the course of their training. While this model is intended to build experience, it can also have the effect of negatively impacting empathy. A recent study in the Journal of Academic Medicine found some interesting results in a different model for third-year med students. Harvard Medical School has piloted an integrated clerkship at the Cambridge Health Alliance, in which med students actually follow their patients longitudinally for a full year through all of their treatments, often going from hospital setting to the home. The third-year students are there when a patient gets cancer diagnosis. They accompany those patients through meetings with surgeons and oncologists, sit with them during chemo, and help them navigate the often overwhelming medical system. The study found those students in the integrated clerkship felt differently about their medical school experience, which is infamously a time of maximal stress. They saw it as more of humanizing, less marginalizing, and even more transformational than their traditional medical school peers. Even though this particular clerkship has more added responsibility and stresses in terms of time commitment, not only did this program foster increased empathy and satisfaction, but these medical students scored just as well as their peers on standardized tests. A program that allows young physicians in training a chance to develop a deeper connection to the experience of the patients they will serve, making for a more empathetic medical practitioner. Now that's a bright idea.
We're speaking today with Vice President of HBO Documentary Films, the Emmy Award-winning John Hoffman. He's also the executive producer of Weight of the Nation, a four-part series and large-scale public health campaign on obesity epidemic in this country, to be presented by HBO and the Institute of Medicine, which takes place throughout the month of May. Mr. Hoffman, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
John, you've used the power of television documentaries to spotlight a number of issues that are plaguing the health and well-being of the country. You've produced a documentary series on addiction and Alzheimer's disease in the past. Tell us about the decision to now use the power of your medium to focus in on one of the biggest health challenges we're facing as a nation, the growing epidemic of obesity.
Well, I think that you just positioning it as this growing epidemic is the reason why. More than two-thirds of the nation is overweight or obese. The rate of obesity amongst children is triple what it was 30 years ago. And the health consequences of carrying too much weight, whether you're overweight or obese, are very significant. And as we came to understand that more and more, we felt that we really needed to use our platform and our position in the media, increasingly looking at issues of critical importance to the nation's health, to inform people that these consequences are serious, not only for the nation, but for themselves as individuals.
John, it's really been about a 10-year window, it seems to me, since obesity began leaping onto the nation's consciousness, and certainly more and more in the last few years. And this partnership with the Institute of Medicine in your current work seems to me a really important one. Tell us about that partnership. How did you come to be in partnership with the Institute of Medicine on this project, and what was the Institute of Medicine saying about the health consequences of obesity?
Well, thanks for asking that, because it is a very important relationship. And the backstory is that for the Addiction Project and the Alzheimer's Project, those were co-presentations between HBO and the National Institutes of Health. And when we decided to focus on obesity, I think I'll say that I was naive to think that we would bring people hope through telling them about advances in basic research and science. And we soon learned that the factors that are driving this epidemic are far more complex than we thought, and that means the food that we grow, the food that we manufacture, and the food that we market, and many more factors. But it was the Institute of Medicine that really began tying all these contributors together in some of their reports that we came to see really changed the dialogue. There's one in particular. In 2006, they issued a report on the marketing of unhealthy foods to children and the link between that and obesity. And so that's the role that the Institute of Medicine can play, is really this independent voice in the area of public health, research, medicine, that advises the nation on issues of critical importance. IOM, the Institute of Medicine, as part of the National Academies of Science, was chartered by Abraham Lincoln so that there would be this independent body that would advise the President and Congress of issues of critical importance. And so the IOM is really fearless, the way they use their independence, to ask the hard questions. So they're the perfect partner for us when it comes to talking about obesity, because some very, very hard questions have to be asked about the choices that we're making in our society. But because obesity is a medical problem and because it's affecting so many Americans, our partners are also the NIH and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Well, that's a great lineup of strategic partners. And as
it's
you said,
it's historic. They've never all come together to work on a project.
As you indicated, you know, the epidemic is just growing daily, with about 70% of American adults being overweight or obese. And I think the more disturbing number is about a third of the nation's children are in that category. And that's obviously having an enormous impact on the next generation who might live shorter lives than their parents. And as you said, you've talked to a lot of people, had you great practitioners and leaders in the field. Tell us what you came to understand about why it's so difficult to get a handle on the obesity epidemic.
I think the most surprising thing for me was to understand that the systems that developed through evolution for the preference for high caloric foods, foods high in fat, foods high in sugar, are extremely powerful. That is what ensured our survival. Our genetics have not changed in any important way in the last 150,000 years. They believe more than 100 genes that control our appetite and our feeding, eating behavior. That's eating and the ability to store food as fat meant survival. And so those systems are still alive in us today. And if we evolved in a world of want, and now we're living in a world of plenty, then you have a mismatch between our genetics and the world we're living in. And there's no reason that I really stopped to think about that. And when I came to really understand how powerful those systems are, it really helped me to really change my view about people who are overweight and struggle with that weight problem, because their body is doing what it's supposed to be doing. It's holding on to calories because it has no knowledge that it has excess when you're overweight. There was no system that ever developed for sort of measuring how much fat we were storing, because there's no reason to. We almost never had enough.
John, I can hear in your voice how powerful this new information was for you. Tell us about these ongoing initiatives as part of the quest to get the nation more involved or activated, if you will, in the obesity discussion.
Our goal with these public health campaigns, we did it with addiction, we did it with the Alzheimer's Project, and now we're doing it with the weight of the nation, is to lower every barrier that we can between the content and the public. So there are the cable systems and satellite operators that are opting in to open their signal so that you don't have to be a subscriber to see the series on May 14th and 15th. All the material, the four-part series, plus an additional 12 short films that are deeper dives into the connections between obesity and heart disease, or obesity and diabetes. Because of the generous support that we have with our two other partners, the Michael and Susan Dell Foundation and Kaiser Permanente, there is a massive distribution of 40,000 screening kits of all the content I just described, plus discussion guides for librarians, for teachers, to use to order and receive for free this gift, so that they can use these materials in community settings to educate their constituents, to work with young people at the YMCA, to work with, you know, pregnant women in clinics, to give them access to this content, to bring in local experts and have an event.
We're speaking today with John Hoffman, Emmy Award-winning documentary filmmaker and executive producer of HBO's upcoming four-part series, Weight of the Nation, which was produced in conjunction with the Institute of Medicine and the National Institute of Health and the CDC. John, in addition to all those that you mentioned, you also have written a book that's just been released by St. Martin's Press, The Weight of the Nation: To Win, We Have to Lose. Tell us a little bit about the book and some of the results that you're hoping to see from that. I take it's in tandem with the other toolkit items that you are releasing.
The reason that we did a book is that there is a consumer that is interested in achieving a healthy weight. That consumer is participating in different diet plans, possibly. They are buying other diet books. And so we feel that it's important to speak to the American consumer that is interested in achieving a healthy weight and bring them the most reliable, evidence-based information about what it takes to achieve that healthy weight. And a healthy weight for many people is just losing 7 to 10% of their current body weight. So if you weigh 200 pounds, that's 14 to 20 pounds that you need to lose. You don't need to lose 50 to 100 pounds to receive so many of the health benefits. But even that small amount of weight loss is hard for people. 98% of people regain the weight they lost within 5 years of their weight loss. 98%. So there are these biological systems that drive people's weight back to their previous high weight. People have got to understand how powerful those systems are, and we felt the need to create a book that didn't treat this gently, didn't create false hope in people. It's the anti-diet book, because a diet is a short-term solution to a lifelong problem. And so we felt it was essential to not speak in general terms about and sort of platitudes about what people can expect when they try to lose weight. It's hard work, and the lifelong commitment to a whole renovation of your life is something that people have to understand is what it takes.
John, you recently spoke about the upcoming documentary when you were at the TEDMED conference in Washington, and you were certainly in great company with other thought leaders in the world of health and medicine. I'm told one of the buzzwords of this year's conference was a relatively newly coined phrase, diabesity. So clearly these dual epidemics of obesity and diabetes are on the minds of everybody in healthcare in the country. And I know you'll be part of CDC's Weight of the Nation conference in early May, and I'm very happy to say we'll be represented, our organization will be represented there for some of the work that we've done with teenagers and food deserts. What outcomes can we expect in terms of initiatives and policy directives from that CDC conference that will help achieve these goals of slowing, arresting, and reversing the obesity crisis? What's your prediction there?
I am not someone who walks through the halls of government, so I have the occasion to drop in and find the most important experts who can inform me and in turn inform the public about these critical issues. But I will say that until we make it a priority to really reform very large systems in our society, until we really look critically at the foods that we're growing, that make up the raw commodities in the foods that we're manufacturing, I don't think that we're going to make progress in this slowing, arresting, and reversing of obesity. The American diet has changed substantially in the past 50 years. And all you need to do is look at the charts that we lay out in the fourth episode called Challenges of the Weight of the Nation. And you look at this, these charts that we layer one on top of the other of the corn production in this country, the soy that turns into soy oil. Soy oil now represents 20% of the calories of the American diet. You look at the cheese consumption, you look at the beef consumption, and they all are having the same trend. They're all going up. So if everything is going up and the price of corn and soy is going down at the same time, you have this formula for this increase in the calories that are being consumed by Americans. The average American is consuming 300 calories more per day than they were 30 years ago. So that's this inexorable weight gain. You can't separate it from the change in the American diet.
Can you pull the thread a little on that and talk to us about the food industry's sort of responsibility here? Because they're spending billions of dollars each year to develop products, packaging, advertising, marketing to entice all of us to buy more food. How did you deal with the food industry in the context of your Weight of the Nation program?
We had the good fortune to work with some economists who have really looked at these issues very seriously and are our nation's leading experts on the connections between the foods that we grow and manufacture and obesity. Paul Roberts, who wrote a brilliant book called The End of Food, argues in the film that if we were to cut 100 calories a day from our diet, that would cost the food industry in this country between $35 and $40 billion a year. Companies, understandably and rightfully, are in business of making money. And so every year they need to sell more product to make more money. And so right now there are no incentives for them to change their practice. HBO, myself, we're not in a position of trying to establish what should be the new incentives for the food industry in this country to reform. But unless they do, eventually it's going to affect their bottom line, because right now if 69% of the nation is overweight or obese, and as you talked about diabesity, and if you have one out of three children born in the year 2000 who will develop diabetes in their lifetime, one out of two if they're African American or Latino will develop diabetes in their lifetime. If a child under the age of 10 develops diabetes, their lifetime will be cut short by 19 years. You're affecting your consumer base. Eventually, their bottom line will be affected. So we have to create some kinds of incentives, but it's not my job to decide what those are.
John, I think we probably share a belief that you have to come at this in a very 360-degree way on every level, and certainly from a community health center perspective and healthcare provider perspective. Some of that is clinically in the exam room or the clinical setting. Some of it's through promoting breastfeeding. It's through sponsoring farmers markets, helping overcome food deserts. We run a national program called Recess Rocks, which is a fun, interactive program designed to get kids that 45 minutes of physical activity at school a day. And you've spotlighted some young people who are attempting to make a difference. Tell us about your efforts to reach young people, such as the Great Cafeteria Takeover, and how that relates to the campaign.
There are some kids out there who I think know a lot more than adults about how to solve this problem. And we learned about a group in New Orleans called the Rethinkers. It is a group of children from elementary, middle, and high schools from all over the Recovery School District who are really have had it with the quality of the food being served to them in their cafeterias. And they started asking the obvious questions: if you care about our health and our future, why would you serve us food that is not good for us? And so we learned about this great group and decided to do a film about them. And that's the result is The Great Cafeteria Takeover, where the Rethinkers have graded the quality of the food in a number of the schools throughout the district, and have had press conferences for the past few years where they give the schools their grades. Many of them were below a C, and some had Fs, and they had very strict criteria for the way that they judged the quality of the food. And they succeeded in getting the food service providers, Sodexo and Aramark, in two different generations of food service providers to the table. And if you are able to see the film, which premieres on May 16th, you'll see that they succeed in getting Aramark to publicly make a pledge to change the quality of the food and the sourcing of the food that are served to children. And so these are children who are learning that they have a voice, learning mm-hmm. how to use it effectively, and producing results.
John, we like to ask all of our guests this final question. When you look around the country and the world, what do you see in terms of innovation? in combating obesity that our listeners at Conversation should be keeping an eye on?
I think that there are farmers in this country who are holding on to some core values about what food, what real food is. The fastest growing segment of the agricultural sector is the organic one, is the locally grown one. But when you learn that it's less than 2% of the food that is eaten in this country, you realize how far we have to go. But without these farmers who are, as I say, holding on to these core values of quality, of diversity, of sustainability, unless we support them, unless we make it easier for them to keep alive as a small business and to grow, then we're all doomed if their challenges remain so daunting that they have to give up. And that, to me, it's both the future in terms of a positive story, because we have a lot of young people who are getting into agriculture, but it's also a sort of daunting one to think that many of them will give up if we don't help them.
We've been speaking today with John Hoffman, Emmy Award-winning filmmaker and executive producer of HBO's upcoming documentary series and anti-obesity campaign, Weight of the Nation, which launches in May. To find out more about the documentary series, go to theweightofthenationhbo.com. John, thank you so much for joining us today on Conversations.
It's my pleasure, and thank you for showing the interest.
I'm Marianne O'Hare with this tech report. Tiny little nanoparticles are poised to make some pretty big breakthroughs in healthcare. Nanotechnology is offering powerful possibilities for targeted cancer therapies. Researchers at Northwestern University are the first to develop a simple but specialized nanoparticle that can deliver a drug directly to a cancer cell's nucleus. The gold nanostars are star-shaped nanoparticles made from gold coated with drugs that allow the particles to seek out a specific cancer cell and then hitch a ride. After that, the particle manipulates its way into the nucleus of the cell and releases its drugs, something lead researcher Terry Odom says is the real breakthrough.
We take advantage of a shuttling protein that will take the particle directly to the site of the nucleus, and then we release the drug. And so this drug then performs its deleterious effects in a way that it would do it as a free molecule anyway.
Odom says, watching initial trials in the Petri dish, they followed the progress of the nanoparticles with electron microscopy and watched the drug-coated particles actually change the shape of the cancer cell wall from the inside. She says this is particularly exciting for treating cancer because in this targeted way, healthy cells are left alone.
Surgeons and oncologists now, they have a pretty good handle on primary tumor cells, but it's the metastatic ones that result in the fatalities. And so we're going to try to test for that as well. So we're looking at some metastatic cell lines as our next stages in terms of model systems.
So far, the nanostars have been successful in hitchhiking onto and destroying from within 14 different types of cancer cells. There are still a lot of technical aspects to work out, like how efficient the nanoparticles will be inside a real body. Animal trials are next, but these tiny hitchhikers look like a potential big weapon in targeted cancer therapies of the future. I'm Marianne O'Hare with this tech report.
If you have questions for Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter, or would like to subscribe to the Conversations podcast, you can visit them on the web at chc1.com. The Health Forum is a Connecting Our Communities initiative from Connecticut Public Broadcasting in partnership with area nonprofits, and production support for Conversations on Healthcare has been provided in part by Community Health Center Incorporated. You're listening to WNPR, Connecticut's public radio station.